Okay, and I mean, Jennifer Bernardini, can you comment sort of on the intent behind the rule, or can we expect additional guidance on that point?
I can't comment on the intent behind the rule, but I understand that my colleagues are working on final guidance for 6417 and 18. So we're inviting people, as always, to send in their comments. So, you know, if we have, you know, structures or transactions that come about that make it clear that the proposed rules have issues, that we're made aware before the final decisions are made.
Okay, that's great. So we can still submit comments for 45Q, even though, you know, the deadline for comments has formally closed. Is that right?
Correct. Taxpayers can, or interested parties can, send in, you know, comments by commenting on regulations.gov to the original notices requesting comment that came out in the fall of 2022. And we continue to look at them. We also have taxpayer representatives directly send their comments to the IRS chief counsel or to Treasury. We also review those. And Treasury continues to meet with stakeholders as available to discuss comments. We are telling people that generally written comments are more effective because we have a lot of regulations everyone's working on, and it's difficult to make these meetings. But, you know, public comment is a very important part of the IRA implementation program.
Okay, great. So the other you know, big change with IRA is prevailing wage and apprenticeship. We noted the base and bonus rate structure. So obviously, prevailing wage and apprenticeship really important to getting that highest credit rate. Jennifer, what are you seeing, and can you offer, you know, taxpayers some practical insights of what you're seeing on how easy or hard it is to meet these rules?
Yeah, so my first recommendation would be, if you think you're going to want the bonus credits, you better start looking at prevailing wage and apprenticeship right now. I think what I found interesting is that when the bonus credits came out, everybody was like, kind of like, oh, yay, we get five times, and kind of like presumed we'll just meet prevailing wage and apprenticeship. What we've found as we've dug in is it's a lot more challenging. And I will say, specifically on the apprenticeship, that's been our big challenge for us, kind of figuring out how we're going to manage this. You've got your straight third-party programs that we've evaluated. Some of those are better than others. Some of the areas in which we're going to operate these projects don't even have programs available. And the ones that we have talked to some degree, I'm not sure we would want to develop a business relationship with. We've looked at hybrid models where somebody provides the curriculum and registers the program, but we do the on-the-job training. And then we've looked at straight setting up a program in-house, which is very involved. From a business perspective, I don't think we're entirely comfortable relying on the good faith exception as a long-term solution, because certainly until we see how that works its way through audit and what that looks like. So that's certainly been our experience with that, and we're still working through it. We don't have our solution yet. On the other side of that is with our contractors, trying to filter down these requirements to the contractors and subcontractors. One thing that, you know, we kind of encounter is you don't realize how much more they're going to charge you for labor when you throw in a prevailing wage and apprenticeship requirement. And so then you have to start modeling, and you have to look at some of the economics of these projects, and it eats through the benefit of that multiplier to a large degree. So those are kind of all. So I would say if you're going to try to go after those bonus credits, which I think a lot of people will, you should start looking at it now and preparing, because it's, in a lot of cases, it's not as straightforward as you might assume.
Are y'all getting questions about grandfathered projects? So it was mentioned on prior panels, and I'm sure the audience is aware. With a grandfathered project, you're grandfathered during the construction phase, but then there's an open question about alterations or repair. Like, in the context of a 45Q project, it's not real clear to me, like, where you draw the line and what would constitute an alteration or repair. Like, if you're completely replacing, you know, an amine unit or a large piece of compression equipment, like, clearly that seems to be the type of, physical change, alteration that might invoke wage and apprenticeship requirements later on. But there certainly are other types of more routine repairs and things that you would expect would take place. We've gotten questions like, are we going to have to focus on those as well? I don't know if there are thoughts from the group on, like, where you draw the line, but it is a question that we continue to get from some of our clients.
Yeah, no, I absolutely hear that question as well. I would hope that I think Treasury's probably heard these questions as well, as far as, you know, alteration or repair, you know, sounds straightforward. And even when you have some examples, you know, every different type of facility is a little bit different. And obviously there's some facilities where routine maintenance is a much larger exercise. And so does that rise to the level of an alteration or repair? So, you know, hopefully we will get further guidance and explanation on that.